on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2026. And I hope you all enjoyed your Groundhog Day yesterday. We are well into the new year. The second month is already upon us, but our mission stays the same. We want you to leave this show a better and more informed investor. And in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance. We'll go over the show topics we have for you all. But given that this show is about you, about your finance and investment questions, let's tackle our first one now.
Hey, this is James from Georgia. Just trying to call you guys about Lincoln Electric Holdings Incorporated. Just trying to find out what's going on with the company. If you could please tell me the fundamentals, and is this a good time to perhaps buy some more of it? Ticker symbol is LECO. I appreciate all you do. Thank you.
LECO is Lincoln Electric Holdings Company. What they do is they design and manufacture welding, cutting, brazing, automated welding, and power supply products. So this goes to not just the manufacturing industry, not just the industrial fabrication industry, but transportation, construction, and all sorts of other businesses. Now, it's a fairly big company, $14.917 billion market cap. It's got a little bit of debt, but not too much, about $1.19 billion in debt. And over the past 6 years, revenue growth has been pretty solid, with the exception of this dip from 2023 into 2024. But according to guidance, it looks like it may have just been a small dip, a small blip on what has otherwise been a solid history of growth. I mean, 6% on an annualized basis for a company in this industry is certainly solid. And so revenue is supposed to grow again from $4 billion in 2024 to $4.25 billion in 2025. We will get those numbers officially on February 12th. And guidance shows another $4.5 billion in revenue next year. So growth continuing. At the same time, margins projected to expand a bit. Return on equity hit a peak in 2022 at 49.8%, trickled down a bit to 35.4%, headed right in back in the correct direction into 2025. But again, these numbers should be coming up to us in a bit. Now, from a fundamental perspective, I mean, the company has reported solid revenue and earnings growth year over year. Their quarterly results from organic growth was certainly solid. They're also tied to the industrial manufacturing and fabrication space. So they're benefiting from a lot of money that has gone into spending on construction, on infrastructure. And certainly, given the requirements of our infrastructure, that may continue into the future. It's also shown a bit of momentum over the past couple of years. I mean, it's underperformed its industry in the past 2 years specifically, but still returned 40.92% in the past 52 weeks. It's up 13.18% year to date. It is, you know, overall a well-established industrial equipment maker with pretty solid fundamentals and margin strength. But it's about as expensive as it has been in the past 5 years, 24.5 times price to forward-looking earnings, 22.5 times price to cash flow. I mean, there seem to be some lofty growth expectations heading into this year, given the secular drivers of the economy. And so I would be hesitant to add more to this name before earnings. For now, I'd keep it on my watch list. I certainly would not sell it, but I'd look to see how realistic those projections are, if that guidance continues, if it's upgraded, if it's downgraded, before I would look to enter into a larger position in this name. That is Lincoln Electric Holdings, Inc. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And our main focus point concerns a fun story, I would say. That's the Super Bowl indicator. As the Patriots will face off against the Seahawks this Sunday, we're going to have a little bit of fun. with the famous Super Bowl indicator and analyze the record-breaking $8 million cost for a 30-second ad spot. Jeez. Also, a couple other important stories that we are going to touch on today. The first being that we have some manufacturing numbers from 2025, and it appears that U.S. manufacturing, despite it being a emphasis point of the president, was in retreat last year, and tariffs may not be helping. So what does that mean for you when you look to allocate into 2026? We also got a story on silver, how the runaway rally really ensnared a lot of Reddit retail traders who were, at a certain point, left holding the bag, as they tend to be. Do we have time at the end of the show? We'll touch on oil prices climbing just over 2% after the U.S. shot down an Iranian drone. What does that mean for oil markets and the market moving forward? We also have some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on high-yield savings accounts versus money market funds, and another on ServiceTitan, ticker TTAN. As always, we also love to take your questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And more importantly, because I get a little lonely here doing this show without live calls, feel free to give me a call anytime over the next 50 minutes. Well, we're going into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream, or maybe AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. The official numbers are in. Now with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you're feeling like giving me a call on this beautiful Tuesday. But before we move any further, let's talk a little bit about the market today. A down day. For the most part, the S&P down 84 basis points, the Dow down 34 basis points, NASDAQ down 1.43%. Russell 2000, though, a bit of a bright spot. Small caps were up 31 basis points on the day. Overall, underperformers included China Tech, Payments, Rails, Entertainment's name. Some of select cyclicals were pretty weak. Software having another brutal day today, following what was a also brutal day yesterday. And other than small caps, I mean, not very many positive performers from what I can see. On the bond side, little changed. It did get a bit firmer. Monday had a bit of a data-driven backup. You saw a reversing of some earlier weakness. Yields down anywhere from 0 to 2 basis points across the board. The dollar index down 20 basis points. Silver ended up 8.2%. Gold finished up 6.1%. Bitcoin, though, down another 3% on the day after touching some of its worst levels since the election last year. Crude oil, though, having a bit of a day amid some elevated geopolitical tensions, finished the day up 1.7%. But the big story, I mean, you guessed it, it was the big story of yesterday as well. Overall tech weakness, software selling off and continuing to sell off amid unrelenting AI competition concerns. You had Claude Legal's plugin. You had some BTC debt exposure in the headlines over the past few days as well. Also, a bit more scrutiny this week surrounding the broader AI trade and what that means for market valuation. Based on the potential for, or really market hoping for, positive macro surprises, as momentum has been running hot up until this week. With respect to Fed speak, Fed Governor Moran said he's looking for more than 100 basis points of cuts this year, certainly putting him at odds with a lot of the rest of the Open Market Committee. On the data front, not much to report because JOLTS job openings was not released this morning as originally planned due to the partial government shutdown. January vehicle sales out this evening. Looking ahead, ADP private payrolls and ISM services will be on Wednesday, along with a quarterly refunding announcement. Thursday will bring initial claims for the week ending January 31st. And preliminary University of Michigan consumer confidence and inflation expectations, now the only release for Friday as originally scheduled. Let's keep things moving and dip into the comment section question bank. Because while you check out our YouTube channels, if you got that burning question on your mind, feel free to just leave it right there, drop it right in those comments, and we'll go tackle those as soon as we get them. This question came in from Steve Franco. It says, I just bought a position in GDX on Wednesday. Now I'm already down over 20% with two bad days. This was on January 31st. This comment was lodged. Feel like selling and would appreciate your perspective. I thought I would be able to deal with the volatility, but now that I'm living it, I don't think I can stomach this. Can you tell me where you see gold miners heading into 2026? I really need some insights. Well, that's the nature of the game, Steve. The nature of the commodities game is volatility. And what you get for that volatility is diversification. You get assets that tend to not be correlated over longer periods of time with equities that provide you with some protection if the dollar is falling, if markets are falling, if uncertainty is there. But the opposite is that it doesn't always go up. And I know it seems like over the past 20 months, certainly from a backward-looking lens, that gold, that silver can only possibly go up. But that's not how it works. Volatility works on both ends of the spectrum. And so this actually goes back to lesson number one. Before you include anything in your portfolio, understand what you own. Understand the dynamics that drive it. Now, with gold, and there was a question a couple days ago, I think it was last week, about silver and someone shorting silver and shorting gold in a leverage fund. And I said, probably shouldn't do that because that's not really for a long-term hold, but whatever, do whatever you want. And my point is that the drivers of what has been driving commodities, specifically gold and silver to an extent higher, those factors are still there. Record amount of fiscal spending, record amount of U.S. government debt, the interest on the debt just exploding because of interest rates. Other countries wanting to take away some of the financial power of the United States in the form of their ability to sanction. And so diversifying away, central banks buying gold. I think, and I think a lot of you agree with me, there are reasons to be bullish on gold. But that doesn't mean that line will always go up. Understand what you own. Thanks for watching. We might have time to fit in another listener question now.
Hi, my name is Neil from Chicago. I love your show and really appreciate what you do for all of us. I had a question about the company Etsy, E-T-S-Y, one of the pandemic favorites. I own some. I'm looking for some recommendation whether to hold them or cut my losses and get out of it. Thank you again. We'll look forward to the question
we get on the show. Bye. Let's take a look at Etsy. It certainly was a pandemic favorite. Etsy is an online marketplace, so it connects these millions of buyers with independent sellers, focusing really on those handmade, vintage, creative goods. I've been a purchaser of products on Etsy. You can requisition things. You can look at things people create. But really, it's been a downward spiral from a stock price perspective since middle of 2021. And you've seen revenue growth, I mean, be okay. It looks, if you pull it back over 5 years, pretty solid at 28% on an annualized basis. But a lot of that was front loaded from 2020 into 2022. And margins have been slipping. Free cash flow is not that impressive. They have a lot of debt. It's a $5.8 billion market cap company with nearly $3 $1 billion in debt. But this is just a story of growth lagging, growth declining, growth slowing. And if you're expecting or desiring to expand, if you want a company's price to appreciate, you need to see sustained growth, organic avenues of growth, revenue increasing, margins not contracting. This is a story of a company that ran up really high in the pandemic, has not recovered since. So for now, gonna have to pass. In spite of me liking it, I'm gonna have to pass. Moving into a break, still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
One of the best parts of it becoming February is one of the most highly anticipated and most viewed events of the year, the Super Bowl. Now, I personally, and I'm biased, think the Super Bowl is better when the Philadelphia Eagles play in it, but it's still fun regardless. Another thing that pops up every February is the Super Bowl indicator, blending Wall Street lore with a bit of football fandom. Now, the idea is simple, and it's pretty catchy. If a team from the NFC wins the Super Bowl, the stock market is supposed to rise that year. If a team from the AFC wins, the indicator predicts a down year or a bear market for stocks. Now, the concept was introduced in 1978 by sports writer Leonard Koppel as a tongue-in-cheek observation, not a serious financial model. Early on, the indicator looked surprisingly accurate, correctly calling the market's direction in 11 of the first 12 years. That early success helped cement its place in market folklore and annual Super Bowl commentary. But from the start, there was never really any economic logic, nothing really linking football outcomes to corporate earnings or investor behavior. The indicator works purely as correlation, not causation, which is always a red flag in financial analysis. Over long periods, coincidences can appear meaningful, even when no real relationship exists. From 1967 through 2025, the indicator shows a headline success rate of 71%. On the surface, that number sounds pretty impressive to me, especially to casual observers. Maybe I'm a casual observer. Dig deeper, and the story changes dramatically in more recent decades. Since the mid-2000s, the indicator's accuracy has fallen to roughly 40%. In other words, it's been wrong more often than it's been right in modern markets. The strongest performance came from before the dot-com era, when the indicator once exceeded a 90% success rate. And that period coincided with a simpler market structure, fewer global macro forces influencing returns. But as markets became more complex, interconnected, and policy-driven, the indicator lost whatever predictive illusion it once had. There are also quirks in how it's been applied over time. One famous caveat involved how the Pittsburgh Steelers were classified despite winning Super Bowls as an AFC team. And that kind of rule bending highlights how fragile and arbitrary not just this framework, but a lot of these predictive frameworks can be. Now, skeptics argue these adjustments were made to preserve the indicator's track record rather than its integrity. But ultimately, the Super Bowl indicator survives, not because it's useful, but because it's entertaining. It offers a lighthearted reminder of how humans search for patterns even where none exist. And for all of you, and for any investor, it's a great case study in why back-tested correlation can be a bit misleading. Markets move based on earnings. It moves based on interest rates, on inflation, on policy, on economic growth, on expectations of all those things and what actually manifests itself, not on sports outcomes. Treating the indicator as anything more than trivia risks confusing signal for noise. The real takeaway is not about football. It's about discipline in evaluating data. Just because something worked in the past doesn't mean it has predictive power today or tomorrow. The Super Bowl indicator belongs in the same category as market almanacs, as seasonal myths. Fun to discuss, very easy to remember, and completely, utterly unreliable as an investment tool. Looks like we got plenty of time, so why don't we answer another listener question that came in earlier to the InvestTalk comment section question bank. This one on ticker NOW, it says, what are your thoughts on ServiceNow, ticker now? It's on a long-term downtrend. Any signs of a turnaround? Let's take a look at NOW here. That is ServiceNow, Inc. It is a packaged software company. Had a real rough day. Down 6.97%, down 46.24% over the past 52 weeks. Down almost 40% over the past 3 months, and down almost 30% year-to-date. It is an enterprise software company. It provides cloud-based digital workflow automations through its platform, and it's used by several large companies. Now, it did beat its Q4 2025 revenue and earnings per share expectations and did provide pretty strong guidance for subscription growth. But despite these earning beats, I mean, it's trending lower because traditional SaaS stocks valuations have been a bit under pressure as investors are rotating towards some of these pure API plays. It also has had historically some pretty crazy high valuations. I mean, it's trading at 27.7 times price to forward-looking earnings, but the average is 60 over the past 5 years. And it really can't escape some of the other trends that it's facing as well. It hit a local high, or maybe even an all-time high back in 2024. And it's really been on a persistent downtrend with the exception of couple good days, most likely surrounding earnings. Momentum is telling you that there is really not any sense of a turnaround here. And this is a general lesson here in not catching a falling knife. That is ServiceNow Inc., ticker NOW. On the next Invest Talk, we will dig into the story, the CapEx war Meta versus Microsoft. Earnings week revealed a massive divergence. Meta stock popped while Microsoft dropped. We'll explain why Wall Street loves Zuckerberg's efficiency, but hates Microsoft's massive AI spending. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP on the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Hello, I was wondering if there is any difference between a high yield savings account or a money market fund for having extra cash deposited. Thank you.
That's a great question because, frankly, I think people too often use HYSAs in order to save money. And the reason why they do is because it tends to be a pretty juicy yield, but money market funds have their advantage as well. So let's talk a little bit about the differences. Structure-wise, HYSAs are in FDIC-insured deposit banks, while money market funds tend to be in mutual funds holding treasury bills or exposed to repos, which is those repurchase agreement trades that tend to get you a bit of yield. From a yield mechanic perspective, HYSA rates are set by banks, and they can move pretty slowly while money market fund yields actually track treasury bills or Fed rates and therefore move almost immediately. But the real benefit here is from a tax perspective. HYSA interest is going to be fully taxable as income at every level. Whereas oftentimes, especially treasury money market funds, well, they are largely state tax exempt. Also in liquidity, I mean, you know, HYSA is very easy. You can just transfer it to your checking account. It is your money. It is not a pooled collective vehicle, but money market funds, they have a bit of a delay, but they tend to be incredibly liquid investments as well. I would say if you have idle cash that after tax yield matters, that's when you'd want to use a money market fund. For emergency bills, perhaps in an HYSA, if you can't wait a day should you need it. Thanks for the call. There's no reason to stop now. Let's make it two in a row from 888-99 chart.
This is Scott from Pleasanton. I've been a holder of Copart, CPRT, for a number of years, done quite well, but it seems to be kind of floating now, and I wanted to get your opinion of the stock and its future prospects. Take care, and thank you for your program. I usually listen to it on a podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. Let's take a look at CPRT. CPRT is Copart. It operates an online vehicle auction and remarketing services business. It's a $38 billion market cap company, has very little debt, only $84 million in debt. And revenue growth looks pretty solid going back the past 5 years, but certainly a bit backloaded. When revenue grew from $2.2 billion in July 2020 to $3.5 billion in 2022. So it looks great from a 16% annual growth rate, but that really was a bit backloaded. Now, you have to understand, right? The revenue is going to depend primarily on vehicle auction activity, particularly total loss vehicles from insurers and used car volume. So a slowdown in auction volume is going to mean a slowdown in revenue. From a margin perspective too, I mean, margins have been falling a bit from a peak of 32.8%. That was the return on equity. But from a peak of about, 32% in 2023, well, I guess it's actually growing just slightly, but the return on equity certainly is falling. It's a bit expensive, though not crazy, 23.2 times price to forward-looking earnings. But it's really been beaten down over the past year, down 32%, 32.58%, down 9.44% over the past 3 months. And so decline in vehicle demand or decline in insurer activity, like has been the case recently, just hurts the business. It doesn't seem to me at a quick glance that there's anything specifically wrong with the balance sheet. I mean, the company's still generating free cash flow. They have $4.7 billion in cash on hand. That's a crazy amount of cash on hand for a company this size. Mostly a situation where you can't escape the economic market cycle. So for now, I would keep this on my watch list, ticker CPRT, Copart Inc. U.S. manufacturing employment has fallen to its lowest level since the pandemic recovery began, moving in the exact opposite direction of the president's promised factory boom. Manufacturers have cut jobs for 8 straight months following the rollout of Liberation Day tariffs, extending a contraction that began in 2023. More than 200,000 manufacturing jobs have disappeared over the past 2 years, reflecting a slow but persistent pullback rather than a sudden collapse. Factory activity shrank for 26 consecutive months through December, though January showed a small tentative rebound in orders and production. Manufacturing construction spending, which surged under the Biden-era chip and clean energy programs, has declined throughout 2025, or really at least from a data perspective for the first 9 months of 2025. Economists say the slowdown reflects both decades-long offshoring trends and near-term policy uncertainty that has delayed investment decisions. If you're uncertain about what the cost of doing business is going to be at any given time, as a manager, you are going to withhold some of those investment decisions. Tariffs have raised input costs for many firms reliant on foreign steel, on aluminum, on components, squeezing margins and limiting expansion. Stop and start trade policy and the risk that courts could any day now strike down tariffs and completely rework the cost framework have made 2025 a lost year for capital spending. U.S. manufacturers also face pressure from cheap global exports, especially from China, which continues to undercut prices abroad. Some companies see long-term benefits from tariffs curbing Chinese competition, but in the near term, profitability has deteriorated. New investment announcements tend to focus on automation, AI, robotics, limiting the potential for large-scale job creation. Now, supporters argue that lower rates and fiscal stimulus could eventually revive manufacturing, but for now, the sector remains fragile and subdued. Invest accordingly. We've already done two from the InvestTalk comment section question bank. but why don't we make it three today? This one on ticker ADBE, which is Adobe. Pull this up on my screen here. And it says, I'm selling my very successful gold mining stocks and thinking about rotating into beaten down technology. What do you think about that strategy? And about Adobe as one of the candidates? Well, always good to take profit off the table. It is one of the best and most difficult things about investing. And you know, people say you hang on to your losers for too long, you sell your winners too early. But you don't want to be in a situation where your winners become less winny or become losers themselves. And so a good way to do that is to have those constraints. Say once it's breached the threshold, start to take money off the table. Now, understandably, some of these valuations, or rather some of these prices compared to where they've been historically, look pretty juicy. Adobe, a company that once traded at almost $700 a share, now trading at $271.93, down 38% over the past 52 weeks, down 19.42% over the past 3 months, down 22.3% this year alone. It is a major software company known for Creative Cloud. So that's Photoshop, Illustrator, Lightroom, which is something that I use because I'm an amateur photographer. And their products are great. But understandably, investors are focused on how Adobe has monetized its AI tools like Firefly, how it's integrated into its creative marketing platforms, and what growth opportunities are out there. And there's a bit of skepticism about the success of this monetization, but also about the competition coming into place. I know people who work in businesses who have products, and a lot of them have moved towards advertising with AI-created videos, with AI images. And so certainly, the leading software franchise related to photo production and marketing can take a hit. Let's take a look at the revenue growth. 13% on an annualized basis, but certainly slowed down into 2024 and into 25, hopefully picking up back up again. At 12.2 times price to forward-looking earnings, I know this is attractive and could be a name you want to enter at some point. But I mean, it just broke another layer of support here. From a momentum perspective, there is nothing that tells you that now is the time to buy this name that was down another 7.3% today. So I'd keep it on my watch list. I like the idea of diversifying out of some of your winners. Maybe stay out of this for now. That is ADBE, Adobe Inc. This is Invest Talk now with more than 62 million downloads. Let's drop in another listener question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm calling about Expedia, ticker symbol EXPE. I've owned this company for about a year now. I'm looking to try to figure out what I should do with it. I think in about 2 weeks, I will hit the 1 year mark, so I will be taxed slightly lower. So if you can just do me a favor and let me know what you would do, just so I can prepare myself looking at the current numbers. After the earnings information. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Well, Expedia hasn't actually produced earnings yet. It produces earnings on February 12th. Expedia, of course, being the massive, massive online travel company that operates those travel marketplaces and brands like Hotels.com, Expedia, Orbitz, Travelocity, Hotwire. Pretty much if you're online on one of those websites, it's an amalgamation of all your travel options, you're probably using Expedia. Now, it's had a rough day. Down 15.26% today, as a lot of the names that could potentially have exposure to competition or may no longer be needed. Should some of these advancements bear out fruit in quote-unquote AI? A lot of those names suffered, right? Adobe was one of them, down 7%. Software has just been hit. And this name's been hit as well, down 17.24% year-to-date, down 8.74% over the past 3 months. And that's despite it having better-than-expected revenue and earnings in recent quarters, with travel bookings improving both domestically and globally. It's been a major driver of stock gains. That's why it's up 38.23% over the past 52 weeks. In spite of that, I mean, momentum's still pretty strong. You do have a short-term reversal in what has been the past month or so. But is that indicative of external factors that may or may not bear out fruit, or is that indicative of the company itself? I would argue that this is still a solid company with decent revenue growth in a time where the conventional wisdom was the economy was slowing, people would stop spending money as much on travel. Another thing they've done is tremendous growth in their business-to-business segment. So they're diversifying the revenue streams away from just being retail-focused and towards companies. That has helped to diversify those revenue streams. It's also helped to improve their margins a bit. Their margin projected to grow from 9% in 2024 to 13.4% in 25, up to 14.7% in 2026. Now, as always, I tend to not want to get into names 2 weeks before earnings because that's when things tend to be a bit volatile. But, I mean, that being said, Expedia is a name that we own, albeit at a half weight of where we may want it in one of our portfolios, because the fundamentals of the company is strong. It'll be interesting to see, is this a long-lasting drawdown? Or is it a la the DeepSeek news a couple, seven, eight months ago? Is the market reacting? Is it overreacting? Either way, I still think Expedia is a solid company. Very interested to see what happens in earnings in a couple weeks. Thanks for the call. See if we can get one more question in from our voice bank.
Hey, Luke or Justin, I've got a question about ResMed, ticker RMD. I actually stumbled upon this stock in October of last year after trying to find one of my clients' required minimum distributions, plugged in RMD in the search bar, and up came ResMed. So I was hoping to hear your thoughts on the company. Thank you so much. I'll listen on the podcast.
That's actually a hilarious way to find a company ticker, is look for some sort of acronym and then accidentally end up on a company. But either way, maybe that was intentional from these guys. ResMed Inc., what they do is they design and manufacture and sell medical devices and cloud-connected digital solutions for sleep apnea, for chronic respiratory conditions, for home healthcare. So they got CPAP therapy, one of their devices, ventilators, diagnostic tools. It is a 37, oh, still looking at Expedia here. Let's flip that over to RMD. I don't know why it didn't pop up. How large is this guy? Can't tell you because my computer doesn't want to work. Let's see if it says it over here. It's a $38 billion market cap company. About 9.7 earnings per share, pays a 1% dividend yield. Quite the range over the past 52 weeks, from 199 to 294. Currently trading at about 250, 260 per share. Now, we're about to head into another break, so we will tackle the rest of this question on ticker RMD when we get back. And because there's only 10 minutes left in this show, if you have a burning question on your mind and you want to get through to me live, before you head off and enjoy dinner or whatever you're doing right now, pick up that phone, dial that number, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
For the break, we were talking a bit about ResMed, which I couldn't even pull up on my fact set, but you know what? I pulled it up. It is a $37 billion market cap medical devices company. Pays a 1% dividend yield, and growth has been pretty solid and pretty consistent over the past 5 years, 11.7% on an annualized basis. Margins pretty solid as well, and that margin sitting about 27.2% this year. Margins expanding over the past couple years. It's trading also below its five-year average price to earnings and price to cash flow. Its return on equity compared to its peers is better across the board. It's also trading at a bit of a cheaper valuation than most, with earnings per share growth year over year at 37.4%. That is very, very solid. Year to date, it's up 438, only up 451 over the past 52 weeks, but really only underperforming In 2025, its industry by about 1%. Its balance sheet, pretty clean, $811 million in debt. Honestly, its core market seems to be sleep apnea and breathing disorders, which has had a rising prevalence across the globe. And the fact that it's trading at a pretty decent valuation, I don't know. Looks pretty good to me. That is ResMed Inc., ticker RMD. Bill, sorry for making you wait. We appreciate the call. Looks like you got a question on BHP. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, I own it. I've had it since I bought it over time from about a year to 2 years ago when it was in the mid-50s to, I think, it lowest shares I have around 48. I sold a little tiny bit of it. I'm just trying to break my kind of a bad habit I've had of, like, selling a whole position all at once or buying all at once. And I'm better at buying over time. Sometimes I just dump a stock, you know, like too quickly. And, you know, it's like I should learn that lesson by now, but I'm getting better at it. So what I wanted to ask you was, you know, the perspective on this with the price, because it seems to, you know, over the last few years, it goes up to somewhere in the low to upper 70s, and then there's a huge pullback. And I hate riding stocks up and down. I bought it for the dividend, try to get it cheap, and then, you know, sell it when it goes up a lot and wait for it to come back, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. You know,
what do you think about right now?
I'd rather you sell it when you're up than, you know, ride it like a roller coaster. So I think there are worse things than what you're doing. But either way, BHP, it's one of the world's largest diversified natural resource and mining companies. Their business is pretty much straight up copper, iron ore, and coal, right? 45% copper, 45% iron ore, 10% coal. Now, some of the byproducts they also have as well, silver, lead, zinc. One of the reasons why it's doing so well, again, half of its business is copper. Copper has been doing well. It's up 49.09% over the past 52 weeks, up 20.49% year to date, up 30% over the past 3 months. You know, you could potentially be, because of all of these driving forces of grid modernization, of electric vehicles globally, database build out, all these things that are massively demanding, things like copper and the byproducts like silver, could be a boon for the mining industry as a whole going forward. And I certainly think that can be the case here as well. I mean, this is trading at the upper end of its range, but not too crazy. 14 times price to forward-looking earnings, 3.7 times price to book value. I mean, compared to its peers, it looks like it's really lower on enterprise value to EBITDA. You know, price to NAV looks pretty decent across the board. It has $22 billion in debt on a $174 billion market cap company. Its balance sheet's not too over-levered. I think this is a situation where you say to yourself, I've ridden this thing to a position where I'm doing well on it. And maybe here is where we start to practice not dumping at all, but instead trimming a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, Bill.
I hear you. Thank you.
Thanks
so much
for the call. Talk to you soon. Well, everybody, that concludes another episode of Invest Talk. As always, Justin and I thank you for tuning in and encourage you to tell your friends and family members that we got these free podcast downloads, more than 62 million so far, and we'd love to add maybe a couple more. You can get them at iTunes, you can get them at Spotify. And while you're at it, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. We really appreciate that. That goes a long way to helping this show. We also have YouTube videos over there on our YouTube channel. Search Invest Talk with two T's. We're going to be really focusing in 2026 on bolstering our video educational collection for all of you out there. One thing we've also been emphasizing is parallel investing. It's where we make a trade for our clients and we make the same trade for ourselves, same day, same price, same percentage. No front running, all the same, keeps us honest and gives you the trust that we believe in the strategies we run for our clients. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and check it out. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security.
Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.